I'm now joined by George Milling Stanley, Chief Gold Strategist at State Street Global Advisors. Quite simply, George is one of the single best resources out there covering gold and gold ETFs. He has some 50 years of experience in the gold market. That includes 15 years with the World Gold Council. And some may not realize this, George was actually part of the team that pioneered and launched the first physical gold ETF, the Spider Gold Shares, ticker GLD. That was back in 2004. Of course, GLD is now the most popular gold ETF in the world, approaching $60 billion invested. State Street also offers the Spider Gold Mini Shares, ticker GLDM, which that has about $2 billion invested, and George is now on the line with me from New York. George, always a pleasure connecting. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for inviting me, Nate. Glad to be back.
So, George, let's start with the gold market itself. Gold is up about 12% this year, and if you look back over the past 12 months, gold is up over 30%, which that places it ahead of just about every other major asset class, and fairly substantially so. And I think what's interesting about that is gold's move did begin well before the coronavirus shutdown, though obviously the crisis has been the clear catalyst more recently. But to begin here, just give us your assessment of gold's move, both before and after the coronavirus shutdown.
Okay, yeah, gold had been trading in a fairly narrow trading range between about 1,100 at the bottom and 1,350 at the top ever since the spring of 2013. And that lasted for a six-year period right up until June of last year when Jerome Powell at the Fed first started to talk about making a mid-cycle adjustment and maybe cutting interest rates once or twice. He's had to do a little bit more than that since then. But gold responded very well to that, broke out above the top of that trading range and flirted with the $1,700 level at one point. And coming into this year, gold was already above $1,600. So $250 above where the trading range had been tapped out. And I think that this is all entirely pre-corona. People were anxious. People were nervous. People were worried about the outlook for the stock market. They were concerned about the possibility of recession after 10 years without one in this country, which is unprecedented. They were worried about low interest rates on fixed income products, worried about levels of government debt, a whole bunch of things. And all corona has done is just make all of that worse. We're now firmly in recession. We've seen a significant pullback, more than 30% in stocks. They've now recouped most of those gains. But in my view, I think that that stocks are pricing in a much more rapid economic recovery, a much more rapid opening up than is likely to happen. So I think there may still be another downward leg in stocks. And I think that's all been very, very supportive for gold, currently still around the $1,700 level. So more than $350 above where that trading range had tapped out. Gold had already made a very, very strong move.
What about the significant intervention from the Federal Reserve, of course, taking rates down to near zero? We've seen unprecedented support of the financial markets. We've seen an enormous government stimulus package, and I think some think there could be more on the way. What role has that played, do you think, here recently in gold's move?
I think that what we've seen was not so much a stimulus package, even though that's what it was officially called. I think it was more of a rescue package. I think stimulus will come as and when we really start to reopen the economy in a meaningful way. I really don't know when that's going to be. Obviously, New York City is key to the economy really getting going again. And Mayor de Blasio is not confident of that happening anytime real soon. So I don't think that we've seen a tremendous amount of impact on gold because of that. What we've seen is, I think that's what generated the big recovery in the stock market, was the rescue package. But I don't think it's being reflected in the underlying economy. There's this huge disconnect right now between the stock market, which seems to be on a tear again, and the underlying economy, which is in tatters. And I think that corona has simply served to highlight what was already a growing disconnect between the market and the economy that many people think it reflects.
George, I mentioned gold has been one of the best performing asset classes. Can you offer some historical context to this? In other words, if you look back at past crises, is this how gold typically performs? Has it been pretty consistent as a crisis hedge?
Yeah, I think gold has performed in the way that it has done on a number of occasions in history. The stock market, perhaps not so much, and that's why I'm concerned that the stock market may be getting ahead of itself. But if you look back to the global financial crisis of 2008, you look back to the recession of 2002, or you go all the way back to Black Monday in 1987, stocks took a big dive, generally for external reasons. Stocks took a big dive. Many people expected the gold price to soar, and it didn't. Initially, the response of gold was that it went down along with stocks, which confused a lot of people. And that's actually what happened in March of this year. But I think that all of the previous occasions in history, 1987, 2002, 2008, it took stocks many months before they recovered their equilibrium and went back up to former levels. Gold, on the other hand, recovered its balance very quickly within a matter of days or at most a week. And again, that's exactly what happened in March, April of this year. Gold recovered very quickly, went on to set new highs. Now, this time around, the stock market has bounced. It's still not quite up to the February highs, but it's only down 10 or 12% from where it was. And that's why I think that the stock market is what's out of whack, not the gold price.
You mentioned gold initially made that move down when the crisis really took hold. I certainly noticed that as well. Can you talk more about that, just this phenomenon where gold does seem to be sold during an initial phase of a big market drawdown, but then seems to recover?
Yeah, look, I think this is a reflection of the liquidity in gold, and especially in gold ETFs like GLD. I think the issue is when stocks go down very suddenly, a lot of investors are faced with unexpected cash needs. Many people had bought stocks on margin, for example, and were faced with calls for additional margin when the stocks plummeted more than 30% in a day. And they were able to hold on to their stock, didn't want to sell the stocks at depressed prices, obviously. They were able to hold on to them simply by means of those who had some gold were able to sell it and pony up the margin calls in order to be able to hold on to the stocks. And of course, what people do when gold does exactly what it's supposed to do and comes to the aid of investors who are in real trouble with other portions of the portfolio, they'll buy it back just as quickly as they possibly can. I think that's why we saw those very rapid rallies in gold while stocks continued to languish for months. That's why we've seen those very, very rapid rallies in those three previous periods, and of course in 2020 as well. That's really my take on it. Now, if we do get another downward leg in stocks, I wouldn't expect to see the same kind of selling in gold, because I don't think anybody's audacious enough to be out there buying stocks on margin right now. I don't think we've returned to those levels of risk appetites that we had before the coronavirus became as serious as it actually is.
Okay, so let's talk more about that. You mentioned a downward leg in stocks. That's certainly a potential. And, you know, from my perspective, I feel like gold investors are tending to fall into two camps right now. There's obviously the camp that views gold as a safe haven, a store of value. And then I think there's another camp who's actually concerned about inflation, just given the central bank intervention we were mentioning earlier and the government stimulus. And I'm sure there's some overlap between these two camps. But can you maybe talk more about that second camp in gold's usefulness as an inflation hedge? I think most people understand gold's role as a store of value or a safe haven, but I know on the inflation side, I have seen some mixed data out there on just how good of an inflation hedge it is. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a lot broader than inflation, but let's just tackle that inflation issue right off the bat. Our researchers show that gold offers superior protection against inflation to TIPS, to Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, for example, which are often touted as the best hedge against inflation you can have. Well, since 1971, when the free market in gold was born, gold has been a better inflation hedge. Whenever we've seen sustained periods of high inflation, which I would define as above 3% a year, then gold has produced returns of 13-14% annually, which is better than most other inflation hedges. I think the other thing that's worth talking about, this kind of leads me on to broaden the discussion beyond just inflation, is that if you put 5% of your portfolio into TIPS, you've inflation protected 5% of your portfolio. If you put 5% of your portfolio into gold, you've achieved superior protection against inflation, and you've also received all the other benefits that gold can give, which can be demonstrated to improve your portfolio Sharpe ratio. You're getting returns, which on average since 1971 have been a compound annual growth rate of 7.75%, not too shabby for an investment that's not supposed to have yield. You're getting excellent diversification because of the gold's lack of any serious statistical relationship with the other components of a typical portfolio. You're getting access to a very deep and liquid market. As we saw, people were able to cash in their gold in size in the crisis. And you're getting an asset that has thousands of years of a track record as offering some protection against the unexpected, whether your tail risk is macroeconomic or geopolitical. I think put all of those things together, it isn't so much people concerned about inflation. I think it is much more a case of people seeing the benefits of a long-term strategic allocation to gold and seeing all of those benefits that come in and that help them to improve the Sharpe ratios on the total portfolio. As far as inflation is concerned, yes, we've seen a massive expansion in the money supply. We saw that in the period 2009 to 2014 with unconventional measures in the face of the global financial crisis. We've seen another massive expansion in the money supply year to date. But Milton Friedman's second term in his recipe for inflation involved an increase in the velocity with which the expanded money supply moves around in the market. Velocity collapsed in 2008 and has not recovered. It took another big hit in March of this year. Velocity is just not there. Until we get the velocity back, and that will mean getting the economy up and roaring again, not just incremental and tentative, which is what people are talking about now, you won't see the inflation until you get the economy really running on all cylinders.
George, I think you just lay out a lot of compelling reasons to maybe consider gold. And I, you know, always try to look at some potential risks or negative drivers. And one that I came up with, I know jewelry demand is really big in China and India in particular. I'm just curious, is that a potential negative right now just because of the overall global economic situation?
I think it's been a very real negative, and it may well be in Q2 as well. We've already seen first quarter figures from our friends at the World Gold Council, which showed because of lockdowns primarily and combined with much higher prices, especially in local currencies, we saw a collapse in jewelry demand worldwide of almost 40%. But that was offset to some extent by an increase in investment demand of no less than 80%. And we also need to remember that the lockdowns only came into force toward the end of the first quarter. So when we see second quarter figures, there's the possibility of an even bigger year-on-year decline in jewelry than the almost 40% that we saw in Q1. But I think that you'll get another significant increase in investment demand as people, A, seek safe havens, and B, seek to get the benefits of a long-term strategic allocation as well. So I think that's, the negative is offset by a very strong positive in terms of increasing investment demand in both of those categories that you mentioned.
Okay, and then very briefly here, because I do want to get to ETFs, anything noteworthy on the supply side? We're talking here about the demand side of the equation. Is there anything going on as it relates to gold miners or the gold supply in general?
Yeah, there were some concerns that there might be a disruption to the supply chain because COVID-19 has disrupted supply chains across just about all industries. But gold, I think, was relatively insulated against that. South Africa got a lot of publicity when it announced it was closing down its gold mining industry. But I think most of the mines, if not all of them, were still running at 50% capacity even while they were supposedly under lockdown. And they're now all back up and running. There was also the issue of three of the biggest gold refineries in the world were closed temporarily by the local authorities because of their proximity to the border with Italy. But they, again, reopened fairly quickly within a month. So we haven't really seen major disruptions in supply. And gold mine production was already on a downtrend. The downtrend in the first quarter of this year was quite simply the fifth quarterly downtrend in a row. I think that the lockdowns and refinery issues accelerated that downtrend somewhat. But I don't think we've seen the kind of disruption that many other industries have had to suffer.
Okay, so with all of that as the backdrop, let's get to physical gold ETFs. We've seen massive inflows recently. I know the Spider Gold Trust, that just took in around $5 billion in April alone. But you look at gold ETFs overall, they're taking in record amounts of money. What can you tell us about gold ETF flows?
Look, year to date, all the gold-backed ETFs in the world have seen net creations, net inflows of over $14 billion. That's well above the previous record for the full year set back in 2009. I'm pleased to see that our GLD accounted for more than $10 billion of that. So more than two-thirds of that total was into GLD, with almost $1 billion going into GLDM, the mini product as well. So, massive inflows, and I think that they are simply going to continue. Total inflows in April were $9.3 billion. So I'm thinking that this supports my suggestion that the second quarter could see investment demand grow even more than it did in the first quarter. I think these are testament to the liquidity of the vehicles. As I say, very comforted at the fact that we are more than two-thirds of those net creations.
Yeah, so George, obviously you're with the issuer that has the world's largest gold ETF. So I think clearly you're going to be supportive of the ETF vehicle. I know your history with the ETF vehicle. But I am curious, you're a gold expert first. And as it relates to actually owning gold in a portfolio, do you always recommend gold-backed ETFs, or are there situations where perhaps gold coins and bars might be a better fit? How do you like to lay out the decision-making there, or is it just entirely personal?
What I say to people is there's no wrong way to gain exposure to movements in the gold price, but depending on specific investor appetites, investor risk needs and risk tolerances, liquidity needs, and so forth. Some ways will be more cost effective than others. And to date, almost $60 billion worth of investor dollars have gone into GLD. So about $140, $150 billion into gold-backed ETFs in total around the world. I think investors vote with their wallets, and that's really what I'm looking at. So it isn't so much what I think, but I mean, investors are telling me that gold-backed ETFs certainly make sense. We saw very strong growth in gold-backed ETFs in those Q1 figures, and we saw something of a decline in small bars and coins, I think largely because those tend to be in those emerging markets in China and India, for example. They're the most popular vehicles there. And obviously, with people on lockdown, they were unable to go to the gold stores and buy them there. It's much easier to buy gold online through the form of an ETF through your broker. So my sense is always that you know, gold coins are very beautiful. I have a small collection of gold bars from different parts of the world and my travels over the years. I like the different shapes and sizes, but those are a hobby rather than an investment. My investment dollars are in GLD for all of my gold exposure. I do have a collection of gold coins, as I say, but those are things I like to take out and look at rather than watch grow incrementally in value.
George, just a couple minutes left. I do have to ask you, and I probably do this every time you're on the podcast, but for the conspiracy theorists out there who don't believe gold ETFs actually own the physical gold they say they do, can you offer some comfort to them? You help pioneer gold ETF. So is the gold backing them real?
Yeah, look, GLD has an outstanding float on the New York Stock Exchange of almost $60 billion. And that's backed by almost $60 billion worth of gold bars in the vault in London. There's no cash. There's no derivatives. We figured out very early on, if you want to avoid tracking error, the bane of any ETF, then the only way you can guarantee to do that is that you only own the underlying. So the only asset in GLD is gold. If God forbid, but if all investors suddenly decided they didn't want GLD anymore and they all put in sell orders with their broker, then the authorized participants in GLD would put in redemption orders for $60 billion worth of gold, and we would give them back the $60 billion worth of gold that backs GLD shares and wrap up the trust. It's a very, very simple equation. The gold is really there. As far as GLD is concerned, as far as GLDM is concerned, when we talk about 100% backing, that's exactly what we mean.
All right, lastly, and I'm only leaving you 1 minute for this question. You and I have a fun history of discussing and debating Bitcoin. We've gone back and forth a little bit. We're not going to do that now. But I am curious, have your views of Bitcoin changed at all since we last spoke?
I don't think they really have. I think what I told you last time was that I viewed Bitcoin more as a casino chip.
That's right.
Gold to me is the kind of investment that helps me to sleep at night. Bitcoin, I think of much more as a gamble. And I'm basing that not just on my opinion of some time back when we first talked about it, but the volatility that we've seen in Bitcoin just simply means that, to my mind, it doesn't belong in anybody's portfolio as a long-term strategic asset. A short-term punt, why not, if you really think that that the thing might be going up? And from time to time, it will. And from time to time, people will make money. But ultimately, they will also lose money. As I say, gold allows me to sleep at night. Bitcoin would keep me awake.
Well, George, next time you're on the podcast, we'll have to schedule another Bitcoin debate. Always enjoy doing that. Really appreciate your time this week. Excellent perspective on the gold market and gold ETFs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nate. I really appreciate the time with you.
That was George Milling Stanley, Chief Gold Strategist at State Street Global Advisors.